Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast, where we give you tools to develop a balanced approach for health. I'm Dr. Kyle Gillette.
And I'm James O'Hara, nurse practitioner. And today we're doing another one of our Q&A and comment episodes. So what's first up on our list today?
Yeah, so it looks like the first comment from Emu Lulu. Guys, great content. Get a better studio. I guess that's a pretty good idea. Did that work? I think it did. Welcome back to the new studio of the Gillette Health Podcast, where we give you tools to develop a balanced approach for health. We are not doing a Q&A episode today.
And balanced, as all things should be, we now have two hosts and two cameras.
So hopefully this works out well. Let us know more feedback below. Hopefully not too many more comments about needing new studios, but we'll always do new tweaks as people discuss them.
So. Yeah.
You know, mics are over the counter, video cameras are over the counter, pretty expensive. Some medications should be over the counter, and it actually usually makes them less expensive. That's what we're talking about today.
Yeah, we're reviewing a couple proposals for over-the-counter statins and over-the-counter antidepressants, so stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast, where we give you tools to develop a balanced approach for health. I'm Dr. Kyle Gillette.
And I'm James O'Hara, nurse practitioner, and today we're talking about medicine going over the counter. A lot of health technology and now pharmaceutical technology, it seems to be going over the counter.
Yeah, and really this podcast is pretty simple. As a medical doctor, the more things that are over the counter, the worse for my profession. So I think everything should actually be prescription.
So we should take back things like Tylenol, NSAIDs, proton pump inhibitors, because those are over the counter and there needs to be a gatekeeping that occurs there, right?
Have you ever taken care of any patient in the hospital or outpatient that has been mildly harmed by Tylenol, NSAIDs like ibuprofen, or proton pump inhibitors?
All the above.
So, yeah, I guess that is a wrap for today. Let us know in the comments if you agree with us. But in all seriousness, it does seem like a lot of things are going over the counter that haven't previously been. Recently, we did an emergency contraception podcast about the O-pill, which can be used as emergency or prophylactic contraception, which we think is great.
Yeah, and this was a great podcast, but I don't think it was as well watched as the actual release of O-pill. So when I went into Costco the other day, the O-pill is there on the shelf. You can actually buy it. I think it's $60 for 4 months, something like that. And people took notice of it actually being on the shelves, and a couple of, I guess, opinion pieces came out. One talking about, well, we should make statins over the counter. This one actually has a study, a couple of studies behind it.
Yeah, self-selection.
And the other is a Harvard psychiatrist. There's a lot of people
Chris Palmer.
But another Harvard psychiatrist or professor of psychiatry is a practicing physician, wrote an opinion piece that now is the time for over-the-counter antidepressants, talking about SSRIs, not like...
Not exogenous ketones.
Not monoamine oxidase inhibitors.
Oh, yeah.
That, yeah.
I guess makes
but
sense.
But exogenous ketones are over-the-counter.
How do biohackers get selegiline and other MAO inhibitors?
I mean, a lot of medicines are over-the-counter.
They're just not legally over-the-counter.
Yeah, on my computer right now, I could probably type in buy Zoloft, and then I could go to a website, put my credit card in, get my Zoloft, get my credit card information stolen, and I'd be a happy camper because I'm on an antidepressant.
Or you can go to a telemedicine clinic that rhymes with whims, and within two text messages, you could have an SSRI prescription.
Well, now there's one that rhymes with whims, and there's one that rhymes with worse.
And there's one that rhymes with bevels. And all three are really the same thing. You're getting over-the-counter prescription things by just sending texts and filling out a couple questions.
Yeah, and we're kind of being facetious here, but really not. There's not a lot of gatekeeping to these medications. You know, there's clinics that are going – well, technically they're not clinics. We can't call them that. They connect patients with independent healthcare providers, and basically anybody can get a statin, anybody can get an SSRI, yes. Anybody can get their ED pills.
Yes.
And there's not a whole lot of discussion of the bit. People have their minds made up that they want these things before they go and pay for a consultation.
They're just another darn intermediary between the patient and – what they know they're already going to get. So you have your pharmacy benefit manager, you have your pharmacy, and now you have these services. And people wonder why medications are so expensive. This is why people go to research chemical websites and overseas pharmacies to get things.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. You hear people talking about, you know, they went on vacation to, for some reason, Italy always seems to get brought up, or
Turkey,
another country over in country over in Europe,
and for like, hair.
Oh yeah, I lost weight. I was on vacation. I ate everything I wanted to, and you know, weight loss drugs like GLP-1s are going to be way cheaper over there. Mm-hmm. But what a lot of people might realize is if you lived your life like you did on vacation every single day, you might not have needed the GLP-1 because you're managing your stress. You're probably getting your sunlight, taking a lot of steps on vacation.
You know, everyone has metabolic damage from endocrine disruptors. That's why we need GLP-1s as naturally minded physicians.
And that's the difference between the European Union and the United States, is that they don't have endocrine disruptors.
Correct. They've banned soy.
Have they actually banned soy?
No. Anyway. I don't think they subsidize it as much. Yeah. That's a different discussion. We'll have another update podcast on endocrine disruptors. But there's a lot of snake oil companies out there that test your body for endocrine disruptors. And these tests are not validated.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole plethora of testing. There's some testing which is good. You can go and order whatever testing you want to in most states now, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, there's a million services that all have their self-service labs.
See our podcast with the CEO of MyTapScore, and I think it's Simple Lab Test or something like that. He did his research at University of California, Berkeley. He's actually well-informed, and he is not influenced by any big money industry lobby of any sort. They are quite independent. See my podcast with him for more info on that.
I think they've cornered the market because everybody needs water.
Yeah. There's a lot of water testing services for commercial reasons. And in fact, last week, the FDA came out with their new ruling that they're now going to start for testing for PFAS, forever chemicals, at all the various water plants and whatnot, which is great. And that is something that you don't want to have a lot of exposure to.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. And in general, if you're not in an area that uses and explodes a lot of fire extinguishers, you probably have less PFAS. But if you live next to an airport that's always testing commercial grade, huge amounts of aerosolized fire extinguisher, or if you're a redneck and you like blowing up or needlessly using fire extinguisher products that are very old, then you might be unnecessarily exposing yourself to these forever chemicals.
Yeah, if you are blowing those things up and maybe you get your water from a well on your property, mm-hmm. when you're finished with the fire extinguishers, you just toss them down the well because, hey, you got to get rid of them and recycling's expensive.
Yeah. That being said, should fire extinguishers be over the counter? Yes. Should Opill be over the counter? Yes. Should SSRIs be over the counter? Maybe. Should Estrace, topical estradiol, be over the counter? Yes, the low concentration of it.
Yeah, just like the United Kingdom has done. Yep. And then we have perhaps the heart of the podcast, statins. When I asked you, should these be over the counter, do you remember your response?
I dodged the question.
You said they shouldn't be over the counter because they should be in the water supply.
You weren't supposed to say that. Yeah, but only non-lipophilic statins.
Correct.
Because lipophilic statins wouldn't mix well with the water supply. Yeah. Interestingly, there is a study about self-selection of statins. And I guess you could say compared to the healthcare provider, if you have patients self-select for statins, I mean, the study says safe and effective. Maybe they choose different words now. But anyways, the conclusion of the study is that patients did a decent enough job self-selecting for a statin. But it seems like a lot of people, when they self-select for, you know, a low dose of rosuvastatin or a little bit of pravastatin. Some people select for lovastatin because it's naturally in red yeast rice. But it is kind of interesting. But I'm still not in the camp that, people should needlessly start statins, just like people shouldn't needlessly start Vascepa, which is icosapentethyl, that don't need it.
Yeah, we've sort of spoken about the issue with, you know, the guidelines and applying those to everyone at an individual level. At a population level, I think absolutely if you made, you know, statins over the counter in this manner, you would decrease cardiac morbidity and mortality, but it would be sort of a long time to see that effect show up. And
would it reduce all-cause mortality? Because a lot of people, the average person who's very metabolically unhealthy, if they don't die from an ASCVD event, would they have increased mortality from cancers, for example?
It may increase the incidence, prevalence, probably the prevalence of cancer.
And
but
dementia.
Age-adjusted, we don't know. Because you do have to die of something. And if you don't have this heart attack, you know, it, likely cancer or something neurodegenerative is what's going to get you.
And all-cause mortality is supposed to be adjusted for age. So that means at any given age, what is the death rate? So if you have one group and just as many people die, but they all die at age 80, that's not congruent to everybody dies, but at age 60. Just for a stupid example.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But anyway, it kind of is an interesting thought experiment. But we certainly shouldn't give these to every man, woman, and child. And we certainly shouldn't put them in the water as, I guess, I suggested sarcastically. But I guess I'm not 100% against them being over the counter because the way that they're prescribed right now is essentially by a robot.
Yeah, I would tend to lean more in favor of putting them over the counter. I would be interested to see a sort of a pilot trial, but again, that would have to be over quite a long time horizon. You'd have to pick a particularly high-risk community, maybe somewhere in Alabama, you know, where people tend to have a lot of cardiometabolic risk factors. And then you sort of follow a community or population and see what happens. I don't know, maybe you have people driving out of state to get these Alabama statins. That could certainly happen. But I'd be interested to see how much is it actually changing the outcomes. One of the cons, I think, this study did use a technology-based tool, and not everyone is going to adopt a technology-based tool. It was pretty impressive. The average age was 63 that they were treating with the statins through this platform. And unfortunately, they are using a 10-year ASCVD risk calculator, which makes it more likely you'd see an effect size if you're treating only patients that have at that point, almost a 1 in 10 chance of having a heart attack in the next 10 years.
Yep.
So that's a positive and a negative that you're not going to be making as big of a dent in the primary prevention population as you could if you're, you know, treating people who are just the very beginning stages of getting some plaque buildup.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a lot of people are going to be prompted to, you know, go see a doctor if they don't, you know, sort of fill out the questionnaire in the way that qualifies them. And people are pretty smart, just like people figure out how to fill out the ED questionnaires.
Yep.
They're going to figure out how to figure out the statin questionnaires if they feel like they want that medication.
Yep. And the IBS questionnaires and this and that. And as a provider, of course, part of your job is trying to discern which of those things is true versus not true. But, patients are smart and they at least they try to be historians in their favor, I suppose, which is part of what makes subjective information difficult and part of why we like objective information. I assume that all of these patients also self-selected the lifestyle intervention pill along with their statin.
A lot of people try lifestyle intervention. A lot of people also don't try lifestyle intervention, but very few people are succeeding at a population level with living a healthy lifestyle. So as good as some medications are, like we like to say, it's never going to be as powerful as having all of your lifestyle pillars nailed down and dialed in. Unfortunately, it's very hard to build an environment that is going to have people make the right decisions when there is so much less friction in doing things that are not good for you. It's a lot easier to sit on the couch than it is to go for a jog for most people. For me, I don't like to sit for too long.
True. Although all those type 2 diabetic Americans that need to be on statins per quality measures, doctors are paid less if you have type 2 diabetes and they forget to prescribe you a statin. How many of those do you think are failing their lifestyle measures? Because, of course, if they all just ate only high-fat, saturated-fat steak, then their diabetes would be completely cured and they would not need statins or anything. But if someone's really willing and able to adhere to such a restrictive diet, they're probably also willing and able to adhere to a routine exercise regimen and good lifestyle in general. And that is unfortunately, a minority of Americans with type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, if I'm just looking on Twitter, I would think that 50% of diabetics are following a carnivore diet, but I know that's not reflective of larger population trends. Mm-hmm. So those people that are, you know, going to an extreme in a dietary measure, whether it's, you know, plant-based or carnivore or what have you, they're probably also making other positive lifestyle changes.
Yeah. Stopping all of your medications and starting a pure carnivore diet as a type 2 diabetic is similar to breaking your leg. You're still on crutches to walk around, and you decide instead of walking around with crutches, you're just going to do heavy deadlifts and squats. Because people who are able to do heavy deadlifts and squats don't have issues walking around.
Yeah. You've got the right spirit. Their heart's in the right place, but they're missing some key information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, that was a nice little...
I do like that this was called the Tactic Study, because I think whatever company goes direct to market with statins should buy the company Tic Tacs. Tic Tac, like the candies. And then your statin is in there. You don't actually do any marketing. You just like switch out the candy for the statin. You can still have the less than 1 gram of sugar in there. You know, whatever, I don't care.
But allulose. Put a gram of allulose. RX sugar. Allulose.
Yeah, allulose and rosuvastatin, 5 milligrams. And wow, that's your Tic Tac. Yep. People like it. The sweetness helps with compliance.
Yep.
I think it would be a great move. So if the marketing department at this company that brings statins to market wants to reach out to me, I have some great ideas.
Yeah. Let us know. Maybe that will be our first official podcast sponsor.
Sponsored by Tic Tacs. Mm-hmm.
What about SSRIs? Should those also be over-the-counter? That was the other thing that I believe I suggested we should put in the water.
Yeah,
you can actually already put this in the
water,
didn't
test,
they?
Correct me if I'm wrong. You can test your water for these now, right?
I did test my water for SSRIs.
Any SSRIs in your water?
Do you think that there was?
No.
No. No SSRIs, no ethanol estradiol. I actually didn't have any of the medications that were on the MyTAP score test in my semi-city, semi-country water. Switches back and forth between the two.
Nice. So this is, I guess, if you're looking at the spectrum of things through a risk-reward lens, this is higher risk and potentially higher reward if you're looking at how many people are depressed, how many people are potentially suicidal, how many suicides would you prevent? And then on the flip side, you're thinking, how many manic events am I going to cause if these are going over the counter? How many like increases in suicidal ideation am I going to cause if these go over the counter? You know, that's one of the things that you warn someone about if they start on an antidepressant is that they may have, you know, sort of new suicidal thoughts. And I think that's more of a concern in younger individuals, adolescents, but not something that could be completely unheard of in adults.
Yeah. The good news is between this and the finasteride we already put in the water, nobody's having premature ejaculation. So that's bonus.
Bonus. Yeah. No, but I think you'd have to do the same thing. You'd have to do a pilot study of some sort where you're looking at a high-risk community, but there's a lot of suicide, unfortunately.
Military bases.
Yeah. Release these SSRIs, and then you sort of wait a couple of years and then crunch the numbers and see, okay, what are these outcomes telling us? How much harm are we causing and how much good are we doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think we did stop doing population-based study without people's approval after things like MKUltra and whatnot. So probably no study like that's going to happen.
This isn't MKUltra. I'm talking about MKLite.
Just light. Just
not ultra.
Psychiatrically active medications. Yeah, that is indeed the study design that would be necessary, but it is probably never going to happen. Hopefully never going to happen.
Yeah, so they probably would do more of a technology-based solution similar to the statin where, you know, they use probably not fluoxetine because of the drug interactions, but another SSRI.
Trintellix.
Hopefully it's, yeah, I was going to say vortioxetine. Hopefully they choose that one. And then, you know, people fill out the questionnaire for depression, get their, you know, SSRI delivered. But again, a lot of the people with, you know, depression are probably not going to be the first adopters of a health technology.
I wouldn't be completely opposed to over-the-counter vortioxetine.
Yeah. So it's basically like you take a direct-to-consumer SSRI company now and you just remove the clinician, which improves the or reduces the cost to the consumer.
And I don't really necessarily think removing the clinician is important. I think removing the greedy ownership and ideally the pharmacy benefits manager and the insurance company and the coding and the unnecessary documentation, I think that is the main reason why it would be beneficial.
Yeah. Well, an app or a health technology like this will not remove a greedy owner, probably. Somebody has to develop the technology.
It would be more like a...
Unless it was a government supplement. Subsidized
it one. At least won't be an owner of a service that connects patients with the clinic.
Yeah, and it would remove clinicians. I suppose they would just direct people to, you know, suicide hotlines and so forth, provide people with resources along with their medication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd probably try to figure out the least bad way to do it.
Yeah, put in a little bit of memantine or ketamine, some other, or dextromethorphan.
Yeah, that was my joke when I saw this. I said, well, why do we need SSRIs over the counter? Isn't dextromethorphan already over the counter? And of course, that is a joke, but dextromethorphan is part of a combination drug now for depression, the other ingredient of which being bupropion.
I knew some people who were ahead of their time.
That's
why they were doing that.
When I was in college, not me, but I remember reading about what they call it, robo-tripping or something like that, where people were overdoing it on the dextromethorphan and probably not great for your brain to be doing that.
Is overdoing it on ketamine great for your brain?
I guess overdoing it is receptor. Relative. How many migs per kg are we talking?
Less than 1 mg/kg.
No, that doesn't seem excessive then.
All right. That is not medical advice for those of you out there who are curious. But yeah, in all seriousness, dextromethorphan, I think, was relatively recently approved in combination with bupropion for mood symptoms for treatment of depression. And of course, the generic is over-the-counter. It's not that it's active at more receptors than NMDA, though. I believe it's also an alpha-2 antagonist. So it's not a perfectly like clean scalpel mechanism of action. Yeah, that's a pretty good discussion on those things. I guess the one thing that we have not discussed, if it should be over the counter, is testosterone.
Yeah, and we briefly chatted about this. One of the criteria for something going over the counter is that it doesn't have a high likelihood of being abused by the general public. So, you know, painkillers, they're not going to put things like oxycodone there. They're not going to put benzos over the counter.
What about Suboxone, buprenorphine with naloxone in it?
Can you? Well, I suppose if you're modifying the, I mean, it's just like the pseudoephedrine, you can modify it into something you can abuse. Same thing with the combination agent there, I would suppose.
It's more difficult because I believe even if you soak it and then reconstitute it, and even if you melt down the tabs, you're still going to be injecting naloxone with the buprenorphine.
Really?
They do make buprenorphine without naloxone, which is used for pregnant patients. And it can be used for anybody, of course, but to prevent diversion and abuse, the combo
built-in safety there
pretty difficult to abuse.
I haven't looked into it a whole lot, but that would make sense. In that case, it would probably be a better candidate for going over the counter, more likely to get approved, I mean, than testosterone.
Yeah.
One exception might be testosterone for women.
Plus estrogen in the same combination.
That would be a built-in control as well, because then, I mean, if you made the concentration low enough to where you would have to inject like an exorbitant amount of cc's, more than just 3 cc's to get a dose, then I don't think you'd have a whole lot of males getting it. But an estrogen would be
1 mg/mL.
Estradiol?
Of testosterone.
Of testosterone.
You could put a little bit of estradiol cypionate in it.
Yeah.
You could do very low dose estradiol cypionate with very low dose testosterone cypionate.
Yeah, that could be reasonable. I would think maybe a 20 mg/mL, because the average, let's say a bodybuilder that's doing his first cycle of 500 mgs of test a week, bro, is he really going to inject 25 milliliters of oil per week?
I don't know. Hopefully not.
Someone probably would. But if it's got a lot of estradiol in there,
yeah,
then that's just even more anabolic, right?
Only for cattle, supposedly.
Yeah, but I think that would be a good deterrent.
What about GLP-1s? Should they be over the counter, or are they already over the counter? By the way, where do you guys source your peptides? Which peptide website?
No peptide website, just compounding pharmacies that get
GilletteHealth.com.
GilletteHealth.com/peptides coming soon. No, just compounding pharmacies that use FDA inspected facilities for the raw ingredient.
Ideally, the exact same facility where the raw ingredient for the brand name peptide comes from the same exact spot.
Yeah. And this is, I guess, sort of a gray area in terms of, you know, lawsuits that are going on. It seems like some of those are getting thrown out.
Yep. Good job, Florida.
Yeah, we saw that this past week or two. Florida won had a case thrown out. I think it was Eli Lilly bringing the case. Mm-hmm. But over the counter, I suppose you could say they're over the counter, but they're more of a luxury good than a volume product, right? I think the company's pushing Tadalafil, or Viagra, Cialis. They're more of a volume. They just want numbers. They want repeat customers. The med spas or online telemed places that are, I guess, dealing GLP-1s, they don't really care because they have such a good margin on those products, whether it's from a compounding pharmacy or if they're just getting it from a website and sort of reselling it. They don't have to have huge numbers. They don't really care about the long-term consequences if people are going to actually use it as a tool to improve their overall health, or if someone is using it for just vanity purposes. You know, I'm going to starve myself until the number on the scale is 10 pounds lower.
People don't think to litigate their esthetician that happens to have an NP overseeing writing the scripts when they have to get their gallbladder removed.
Yeah, it's definitely a little sketchy, but I guess it is over the counter, just like a lot of things are over the counter, but it doesn't mean they're accessible to everyone. You know, anyone can go buy a Mercedes if they have the resources to do so, but it doesn't mean it's accessible to everyone.
Yeah. That being said, I did learn in a video recently that peptides are fragile snowflakes, that if you just move them a little bit, they actually explode and lose all their content.
Yeah, this is a common question. People will write in and say, oh, I think I might have, injected the water into my peptide vial too quickly, or I dropped my peptide vial, or what about HCG? I feel like it lost its potency. I started a new vial and I feel it again. These are things that we've commonly heard and people comment and say. And I think that that's a bit of hyperbole. I don't think that peptides are actually that fragile.
Yeah. I know personally, I have taken HCG that has been at room temperature, non-reconstituted, so still lyophilized, freeze-dried, for many years from a compounding pharmacy. And the urine test strip, the little strip of paper, pregnancy test for HCG, has been very positively positive when I peed on it. Although I was pregnant because I forgot to take my O-pill. But I was not pregnant, so that HCG for years. And after I very vigorously injected the backwater and shook it like a maniac, my urine test strips continued to be strongly positive for months using that HCG.
Yeah, I think it's certainly possible that a bit of potency is lost, maybe 10%, but at the end of the day, it's not going to make it a completely ineffective medication. And yep.
Best I estimated 10% every month or so.
Yeah.
Like complete random estimate off.
Yeah, we don't have the scientific backing there. When we have the Gillette Health Foundation and we can run studies to benefit the public, we will absolutely abuse some peptides, not taking them, but abuse them by rolling the vial around, playing catch with them. Slamming them on the table and then testing the potency to see how fragile are peptides actually.
Yep. And we will do this for over-the-counter research peptides and various supplements and medications, because at the end of the day, it's pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics. And you're looking for adulterants and then the characteristics of the active ingredient.
Yeah. So that'll be great. That'll be fun.
Yeah. I think that mostly covers the various things that we were looking into. We've discussed CGMs in the past, so we can also link that podcast. But hopefully this gives people some good takeaways.
Yeah, and before we wrap things up, I guess we should mention that we have a new camera and microphone set up. Mm-hmm. For those who have not noticed yet, take a second look. The setup is different.
Yeah, so hopefully people enjoyed that. As always, feel free to leave constructive comments in the comment section below. We are always trying to improve our audio and video for the algorithm and for your viewing and listening pleasure. Feel free to comment on how our voices, we're changing our voices or whatnot as well. Apparently we do that too. So yeah, we have new mics. Hopefully this translates well. But yeah, I think that about sums it up. As always, thank you for your time and may God bless you with health and happiness.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.